We're doing Rav Chalap on Chanukah, and our topic is Milchemet Yavan B'Yisrael, the War of the Greeks against the Jews. It breaks down into five subtopics: Rina V'Simcha, happiness and joy; Kinat Ayvanim B'Yisrael, the jealousy of the Greeks of Israel; Kedushat Yisrael U'matumat Ha'amim, the holiness of Israel compared with the defilement of the nations. Topic number four, Kinat Ayvanim B'Torah She'Be'al Peh, the jealousy the Greeks have of our oral tradition, which is the hidden aspect of the Jewish people. And topic number five, the revelation of the holiness of Israel. So the Navi in Zechariah says, Rani V'Simchi Bat Zion, be joyous, celebrate the daughter of Zion. Ki hineni va v'shachanti v'tocheich, I'm coming, and I will settle within you, Hashem says. V'nilvu goyim rabim el Hashem, many nations will join and follow the way of Hashem. V'ayuli la'am, and they too will be my nation. V'shachanti b'tochech, and I will settle in your midst. Ki Hashem tzvakot shelachani elayich, for Hashem, the one who controls armies, He sent me unto you. V'nachal Hashem et Yehuda chelko al admat HaKodesh, Hashem will again take His lot on the Holy Land, uvachar od birushalayim, and Jerusalem will again be the chosen place. So that's a short version of two verses in the Navi Zechariah. So the Navi began with Rani v'Simchi, two terms for joy. Rina and Simcha, says Rav Charlap, are parallel. As we find in David HaMelech says, that when Hashem brings us back, B'shuv Hashem et Shivat Zion ha'inu kecholmim, az yimalei schok pinu, ulshoneinu rina. David HaMelech describes, we will have schok, we will have rina, and then we're going to say, hayinu semechim, we were happy. Hazorim bedima, those who planted with tears, berina yiktzoru, will harvest with song. And then, bo yavo verina nosea lumotav, as the ox plows, he's crying. But when he comes back and he starts seeing things grow, he is rejoicing. So you see in Shir HaMaalot, David HaMelech describes two types of happiness. There's simcha, there's rina. And they're parallel. B'shuv Hashem et Shivat Zion lo tiyah simcha rak mitzad echad bilvad, el az yimalei eschok pinu. As it says in the Jerusalem Talmud, that when you're making a blessing, don't have anything in your mouth, because yimalei piti letecha, the mouth has to be filled with the praise of Hashem. So you're not supposed to have a candy in your mouth or gum in your mouth or something else in your mouth as you make a blessing. And this is actually quoted in Halacha as well. So when Hashem will redeem us, that's the idea. Yimalei schok pinu ulshoneinu rina. Our mouths will be filled with joy and thanking Hashem. There will be only one thing we'll talk about, and that is thanking Hashem. So the idea over here is that the happiness will be all encompassing. Ulshoneinu rina, and our tongue will be singing in joy and thanking Hashem. If we understand why we're happy, so then you're as happy as the reason. If suddenly things are good for you, and you don't know why they happened, so then you're happy, but your happiness is not focused on A or B or C. You're just happy because things are good. You don't know how it happened to you. And you're not going to start saying, hey, A or B or C happened. I don't know what's about you guys, but I didn't know that yesterday Trump would declare Jerusalem as the capital of the Jewish people. I didn't know it was coming. I don't know what led up to it. So there's this sudden declaration, and suddenly you say, ah, very nice. Wonderful, Baruch Hashem. Wait, if we would have known everything leading up to it, the politics, the discussion, it would have been a different happiness. It's not. It's suddenly something appeared on the scene, and you say, wow, Baruch Hashem. It's a totally different happiness when you don't know anything that led up to it. It's not that you could start talking about, boy, was I worried when this happened, and thank God that happened. You have no idea. It just suddenly happened. And at that time, The happiness is without bounds. It's not defined, I'm happy because of A or B or C, and thank God D, E, and F did or did not happen. That's when you have Rina. Rina is when you burst into song because suddenly something good happened. That's the idea that Lishonenu Rina. Our tongue is just singing. It's as though our tongue and the song have become one. That's the idea of Rina, to burst into song. That's the idea of Rani v'simchi bat Tzion. The Navi tells Zion, you will burst into song, you will be happy, and it won't be something that you can draw a picture and say, this led to that and that led to that. You're going to suddenly see things are right, and then you'll burst into song. Then the Pasuk says, nations will accompany you, and they too will become my nation. Nations will join us. But there is going to be an integral difference between those who join beforehand and those who join afterwards. And the Navi says, those that join after the final redemption, then Hashem is going to say, you're not a part of it. And that's the idea of V'yadat ki Hashem tzvakot shlachani eilayich. Hashem says, you'll know I sent to you alone. Hashem's been sending us prophets again and again. And the focus is that we have to reach the right place. But at the end, the focus is there's a task for the Jewish people, and anyone who's not there doesn't have that mission. And when the nation suddenly wake up and say, hey, that's right, I want to join, at that point Hashem says, I've chosen who my people are. You guys can be nilvu, you can be an accompaniment, but you can't be a part of it. And so the Navi says, even if the nations will say, when the time comes, they'll say, we also want to accept the Torah. Hashem will say, too late. That's what's described also in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that the time will come. When Hashem finally calls the world to judgment, the nations will stand up and say, we also want Torah. Give us a chance too. And Hashem will say, now it doesn't work at this point. The Navi says that the rule of becoming a part of the Jewish people is vinilvu. When a person says, I want to join too. The concept Rav Harlap is saying now sounds obvious, but in reality it is probably one of the most difficult things that a ger has to do. Rav Harlap says you want to know when a person is a real ger. He's a real ger when he says, I am lucky to join and be a part of something greater than me. I'm a part of a great people. Why is this challenging? In order for a person to be a ger, a person has to have tremendous self-worth. You can't stand up to everyone around you who's not taking the path you're taking. And then you can't do that without having great self-worth. How do you do that? A person's family, a person's parents, a person's siblings, everyone else took a different path. Now this person is taking his path, her path. How do you do that? You have to have self-worth. Self-worth, healthy self-worth. But then, you joined. You're a part of it. And now, says Rav Harlap, if it's real, then you have to be prepared to say, I'm lucky to be a part of them. Wait a second, what got me here? My ability to say, I'm standing up for what's right. Even if no one else agrees. So what propels a ger, what gives him the strength to stand up and do giur, is tremendous self-worth, healthy self-worth. And then for a person to say, I'm lucky to be a part of them, is a recognition there's something great here, and I'm the one that's fortunate to join along. That's not so easy. It's almost counterintuitive. It's almost the exact opposite of what brought a person in the first place. You need tremendous self-worth to take the move. And then says Rav Harlap, it only works when a person says, I'm lucky to be a part of this greater people. V'nilvu, I'm accompanying them. That's the opposite sometimes. That's the humility that a person has to have to say, this is a great people and I'm lucky to join them. And that, says Rav Chalap, is what the Navi is describing. V'nilvu goyim, if the nations accompany with that humility, then Hashem says my Shechina will rest on them as well. The Greeks were jealous, as we learned last night and in the beginning of the week, that the Greeks had a declared goal, that the Jewish people should not be unique. And so the Greeks were jealous because they recognized we have a unique relationship with Hashem. We daven and Hashem replies. And the Greeks kept thinking that if they develop their philosophies and they develop systems based on their logic, so then they could come close to Hashem more than the Jewish people. And they said to themselves, the Jews have at the root of what they do, emunah. It's not all up here. Part of it comes from here. The Jews are descendants of Yaakov Avinu, Ishtam Yoshev Alim. The Pasuk says in Micha, Titen Emet li Yaakov. You give Yaakov truth. The Pasuk says in Yeshaya, Pitchu Sharim v'yavo goy tzadik, Shomer Emunim. So the Greeks thought, we can darken the eyes of Israel. We can make things dark for them. They said, the Jews shouldn't be different than any other nation. The Jews believe they have a special relationship with God. Well, we're going to eradicate that feeling. Now, if you look at history from a secular perspective, the Greeks had the unified code. The Greeks had a legal system that went across their kingdom, and that was their political strength. There was equality under their kingdom. So they said, everyone has to adopt the same beliefs, and then everyone can have the same legal system. So the Greeks were unique in the fact that they afforded all their citizenship. They said, every country we conquer can become citizens. So they gave equal rights. But part of that equality was eradicating the uniqueness of each culture. So every other culture went along with it. But the Jews said no. So again, from a secular perspective, the Greek army machine was interested in victory, was interested in peace, was interested in the unified law. Our tradition is that there was something much deeper going on here. The Greeks couldn't stand the idea that we had a close relationship with Hashem, and that's what we learned in the Megillat Antiochus. So their battle was against our uniqueness. They said, don't keep Shabbos, don't circumcise, don't keep your calendar. What happens when we circumcise? It's the ultimate difference between a Jew and a non-Jew. We've signed into our body a difference between us and every other nation. We say, I have a covenant with God. Along came the Greeks and said, no, you don't. We want you to be just like us. You're mutilating the body. What?
Is that why they banned Brit-Mila?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
so we also learned in Megillat Antiochus that they had a philosophical claim against it. We don't want the Jews to believe that they're closer to God than anyone else.
Why do the Greeks care as opposed to any other nation?
Again, from a secular perspective, the Greeks' system was about equality for all their citizens. Everyone had to be the same. From our perspective, there was a battle against the holiness of the Jewish people. Don't believe that you're unique in your relationship with Hashem. The Medrash says that when Avraham Avinu wanted to circumcise, so his three buddies, Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, wanted to part with him. They also wanted to circumcise. Why? According to one Medrash, Mamre circumcised himself first.
He died, right?
And died, bled to death, according to one Medrash. Why? Because they didn't want Avraham to be different. You're not going to be different than all of us. You're a monotheist, so are we. You have a relationship with God, so do we. Mamre was not willing to recognize that Avram was different. He was not willing to look up to Avram. We can be friends. You can't be greater than me. But the Torah says, Hin am levadad yishkon. This nation does stand alone. Uvagoyim lo yitchashav. And you can't count it as one of the 70 nations. One of our roles in this world is to declare Hashem created the world. We declare firstly our faithfulness to Hashem with the circumcision, but secondly we declare it every week. When we keep Shabbat, what do we say? Creation took 6 days, on the seventh day Hashem rested. I'm resting on the seventh day. It is a second declaration about our relationship with Hashem. It's a declaration that there's a creator, there's a moment of creation, and at His will He created the world the way He wanted to. The Pasuk says in the Navi Yeshaya, Atem Eidainu Hashem. You are my testimony, says Hashem. Who on planet Earth testifies that Hashem created the world? Us. What did the Greeks say? They said the world always existed. Their philosophy was there was no specific moment of creation. So they couldn't stand that we were keeping Shabbos. That was the second point. If the first point was our unique relationship with Hashem, the second point was there is a creator. And so Shabbos was a declaration. Hashem created the world. And so the Greeks fight Shabbos. What's the concept of the Jewish calendar? We say we're not only under the forces of nature. We're above the forces of nature. We discussed once the Jerusalem Talmud in Tractate Ksubos that says that a girl who's 3 years old, under 3 years old, if the hymen is broken, it's a wound that will heal itself. Over 3 years old, then she's not a virgin for the rest of her life. And the Jerusalem Talmud says, if a girl was born in the month of Nisan, and in Adar, the court decides to make it a leap year, so now she's going to have one more month before her birthday comes. So then if during that month she wounds herself, so then her hymen will heal itself. Wait a second, and had the courts not made it a leap year, so the Talmud says then it wouldn't heal itself. So wait, there's a natural process here. Either it heals or it doesn't heal. What does that mean? The Jerusalem Talmud says no. Hashem gave us the ability, by giving us the ability to control the calendar, Hashem gave us a certain amount of impact on nature. So that's the third concept that the Greeks didn't like. So that's why they fought these three mitzvot. But we won the war. The end of the story is we won. Hanukkah is the celebration of our victory. What do we say? Hashem, in your great mercy, you stood by the Jews at their dire time. You gave over timayim, b'yad tohorim, defiled, in the hands of the pure. Rishaim, the wicked, b'yad tzadikim, in the hand of the righteous. Zedim, those who purposely trampled on your directives, b'yad oskei torotecha, you gave them into the hands of those who dealt in your Torah. What's tzadikim? So we call the circumcision a sign of righteousness. Those who keep Shabbat are called Oskei Toratecha. Rav Chalap says these three code words correspond to the three mitzvot. The Gemara in Tractate Shabbos has a discussion, what day of the month did we receive the Torah? The Gemara says, doesn't matter how you work it, everyone agrees it was on Shabbos that we received the Torah. Shabbos and Torah are connected. So Rav Chalap says, the idea of Oskei Toratecha is a code for keeping Shabbos. Tzadikim is a code for the circumcision. Tehorim is a code for the sanctification of the calendar of the month. Why? Because every Rosh Chodesh, as we find by King David, they would have a meal where everyone would purify themselves, right? When King Saul makes a meal and David doesn't show up, so he asks, where is David? So his son Jonathan, Jonathan, tells him, he says, David, it says the first day David wasn't there, Shaul assumed, Bilti Tahoru Kilot Tahor. David didn't come to the meal because he wasn't pure. So we see there was a custom every Rosh Chodesh, all the men would go to mikveh, purify themselves and have a meal. So the when we say in Al Anisim that you gave Timeim Biyat Tehorim, the word Tehorim is a code for the sanctification of the month. Because every new month, the men would purify themselves. And that's what we express in the prayer of Al Anisim, where we give thanks. We say, what did the Greeks decree? They decreed on these three mitzvot, Shabbat, Brit Milah, and Rosh Chodesh. And their decrees did not succeed. On the contrary, the Timeim were given into the hands of the Torim. We kept the calendar. The Rishayim were given in the hands of the Tzadikim. We kept the circumcision. We retained our righteousness. The Zaydim, those who would trample on Hashem's mitzvot, were given in the hands of the Oskei Torotecha, those who dealt in Torah, the ideas we were able to keep Shabbos. So that's point number two. The battle between us and the Greeks about whether we have a unique relationship with Hashem, where we were victorious. Point number three. It's an extraordinary thing that we were able to uplift ourselves as a people among the from the defilement that affected everyone around us. How did we do that? Meaning, we learned in Megillat Antiochus that time and again, the Greeks had military victories. And they breached our walls, and they entered the Holy of Holies, and they slaughtered a pig. And how did we hold on to our spirit? How did we walk out of this era of continuous defilement, the Jewish daughters being taken over and over again and violated by the Greeks, the temple being taken over and over again? How did we uplift ourselves and come out of it holy? Says Rav Harlap, that's because the Chashmonaim, the Kohanim, they didn't come to take the throne as, we're the kings. We are now the leaders of the Jewish people. They wanted one thing. We will take the throne to teach Torah. Our job as Kohanim is, ki siftei kohen yishmeru dat v'torah yevakshu mipiu. The Navi at the conclusion of prophecy, the Navi Malachi, the final prophet says, the Kohen is responsible to hold on to the Torah. He's the one who's supposed to teach. Ki malach Hashem tzvakotu, he's like an angel of God. What does the Navi say in Mishlei? Bi melachim yimlochu, kings have to rule through the Torah. So the idea of the Hasmoneans, the idea of the Chashmonaim was, we will rule the Jewish people to uplift the Torah, to bring them back through Torah. They said, if we can do that, we can uplift them above all the defilement that just happened. What happened with the Greeks? On the one hand, the Greeks said, we want to be philosophical and spiritual, and we want to live with philosophical clarity. We don't need anything physical. On the one hand, they were willing to lead an ascetic lifestyle. And they said, who cares about the physical? On the other hand, you see that they were willing to use human logic, and they said, we can figure everything out. Wait a second. Are you willing to connect to the first cause, as the Greeks would call it, or are you going to say that the human mind can decide what are the ethical and moral ways of life? So the Greeks said, all you have to do is philosophize. You don't have to take practical mitzvot. If you think about it, you'll connect to the first cause. You can uplift yourself, as we find the philosopher in the Kuzari was arguing. They said, why do you think that your actions down here can affect anything? Nothing can happen. There's a first cause, and he doesn't know you, but you can connect to him, and there's no reason to perform mitzvot. So that was their philosophical argument. We don't approach things that way. We say, I don't know. I don't have a good answer, but I know God said so. So I can't tell you why Hashem said to do a circumcision. I don't know why. I know he did. So I'm going to do it. So wait, but you're not answering my claims. You're right. I'm not answering your claims. The Greek would argue, but I'm giving you good philosophical arguments. And the Jew would argue, okay, they're good philosophical arguments, but I have a tradition. This is what God told my people to do. This is what I'm going to do. So, deep down inside, we do know. We know that Hashem who created the world said, you're making the world a better place. You are developing the world the way it should be developed. Every mitzvah affects the whole world. But I can't explain that to the Greek. The Greek is saying, from my scientific understanding, I can't understand why you should do circumcision. I can't understand why you should keep Shabbos. So on the Greek's level of understanding, my answer is, I don't know why. But if you ask me, in our little base medrash here, I'll tell you the truth. I believe that the whole world exists because of what we're doing. I believe that Hashem gave us a system that's what's going to keep the world functioning. I can't explain it in the Greeks' terms. I can explain it in the Torah's terms. So the Jews were on the one hand standing opposite the Greeks and saying, this is my tradition, this is what God told me to do. But deep down inside, we had a good answer. What the Greeks sensed is that the Jews weren't answering them face to face. The Greeks were arguing logical, philosophical arguments, and the Jews would tell them a simple answer. I can't answer you, but this is my tradition. Or the Jewish woman who goes on the top of the tower and says, you're not going to win. I'm going to circumcise my son. And she stands there and circumcises him. And the soldiers start chasing her and she jumps off. So she won. So the Greeks sense there's something here that they're not telling us. And so the Greeks sense the concept of Torah Shebe'al Peh. They realized there's something that's not written here that we're missing. There's a connection that they have to God that they're not sharing with us. So all our arguments can't penetrate because they're not being open with us. There's something deeper that connects them to Hashem. And that's what the Medrash Tanchuma says. Hashem said to the nations, you claim you're my children. Do you know my secrets? My children know my secrets. You know what my secrets are? The oral law. You try to take the written Torah and apply it. Go ahead. Put tefillin in the middle of your forehead. That's what it says. I'm saying, Bein Enecha, wear your tefillin over here. It says on Shabbos, Al Yetzeish Min Komo, don't leave your place. So I guess you're going to spend Shabbos in the bathroom. Because otherwise you can't go there, right? Al Yetzeish Min Komo, B'yom HaShabbat. The Pasuk says, don't leave your place on Shabbos. Pasuk says, an eye for an eye. Think about it for a minute. What type of life do you lead if you take the Torah and you take it literally and you don't have the oral tradition? So the Medrash says, Hashem gave us an oral tradition and Hashem did not give the Torah in a manner that can be applied in a balanced way and a good life, because the idea was nations would repeatedly say, we know the Torah, we're the chosen people, and Hashem always answers them, prove it. Hashem always says, I've given a hidden interpretation for everything you have in writing. Go fight that. Go show me how you can do it. And that's why the Greeks realized that their battle is really against the oral tradition. The Greeks were looking for the deeper root. What's the real connection of the Jewish people to Hashem? And they came to a conclusion, it's not the written Torah. There's something else going on here. It's Torah Shebe'al Peh.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah. It says by Aaron that he stood opposite the menorah and he lit the flames of the menorah the way Hashem commanded Moshe. So the Medrash says he lit the menorah the way Hashem commanded Moshe. He didn't change anything. Why is that a big deal? What does that mean? He just lit the menorah the way Hashem told Moshe. Okay, isn't that obvious? Isn't that what should be? There are lights from above that have to reveal themselves down below. But our physical world is limited. So if the lights from above have to reveal themselves down below, then those lights have to change. They have to limit themselves. If spiritual concepts illuminate without boundaries, and physical lights have boundaries, so then it would seem that there's no way you can bring a spiritual light down through a physical light, because physical is limited, spiritual is not limited. Aaron, it says, was able to light the menorah the way Hashem told Moshe. Hashem told Moshe, it means Hashem gave him concepts, spiritual concepts of what's supposed to happen when you light the menorah. Aaron was able to do that. That's the level of Aaron. The Medrash says in certain ways Aaron was equal to Moshe. Aaron was able to take a Torah that is on the conceptual level, on the spiritual level, it's limitless, and bring it down into human life, and bring it to people, and connect people to something without diminishing the Torah. Wait a second, how can you... The Torah concept of honor your father and mother is limitless. The human concept is limited. I have one father, I have one mother, there's only so much I can do to honor them. No, Aaron was able to give over the concepts in ways that were not limited. It says about Aaron, Ki siftei kohen yishmeru dat. The Kohen can retain the Torah. What does that mean? the Kohen can give over the oral tradition, Torah yevakshu mipiyu. The Kohen's responsibility is to give over, as we learned earlier today in the Ran, to give over the Torah in a way that's much broader than the written text. That's where the oral tradition gives us understanding of the Torah. You read the written text, it's very limited. There's one Torah scroll, you know what it says, you can memorize it, you got it. No, you don't. You start learning the oral tradition, you start realizing that it's limitless. Wait, so how do we have such a tradition? How do we know so much? Where do we know so much from? It's far broader than can be redacted in any text. That's why all the people who will study the art scroll and all the different tools you can use to learn Talmud, they're never going to get it. If you use those tools to learn how to learn, and then you learn, remember, art scroll is giving you a tool to learn how to learn, but you're not yet learning. If you've learned how to learn, then you can start learning. Real learning is learning the Talmud. It's learning the oral tradition. It's not learning art scroll. Art scroll is like a dictionary. You're not going to be a knowledgeable in Talmud from reading a dictionary. You're going to have tools, but you're not going to know Talmud. After you've used the dictionary to learn the language, to learn the system, then you have to go back and learn the text. So you can use art scroll for a time to learn how to learn the language, but it's like a dictionary organized in the order of the Talmud. Very good, with commentaries. That's not learning. The oral tradition is far deeper and far more encompassing than anything art scroll can write. You could never finish. I wish you guys could join me for 10 minutes in my advanced Talmud class, just to see how four lines in Talmud can spread out to so many concepts in halacha. But you have to know how to read those four words. I gave a Talmud class almost an hour this past Wednesday night on four words in Talmud. Four words. How do those four words break down into halacha? And it affects maybe 40, 50 different halachot. Four words. But you have to learn how to read those four words. You're not going to learn that from art scroll. Art scroll is a dictionary. You understand the word. But oral tradition is limitless. How do you pass on something limitless? So that's where you need the Aaron HaKohen to give over the Torah. That's the hidden aspect of Torah. That's what you want to tap into, the oral tradition, and you can never encompass it in writing it. But that's the idea that Aaron was able to illuminate through his lighting of the menorah. The Hasmoneans wanted to bring back that Torah. That's why they took the leadership, because the key to the Jewish future is to tap back into that Torah. I want to pause here just for a second. People question why so many people went into learning Torah in the last 70 years. And the answer is that after the Holocaust, the great rabbis of the Jewish people said that after the tremendous blow that we suffered from the Holocaust, the only way the Jewish people will last is if every Jew possible will dedicate himself to learning Torah. The Kollel concept, which did not exist before World War II, you would have one person from a whole village who went to learn Torah. Everyone else worked. It was the exception who went to learn Torah. Suddenly, you have Bnei Brak bustling with people. Everyone has to learn Torah. Where did that come from? That never existed. You never had whole communities of people who were dedicated to learning Torah. That didn't happen throughout our history. Right. The rabbis realized after the Holocaust, the only way there would be a future to the Jewish people is if we stop the normal Jewish life and dedicate ourselves only to Torah. It's not very different than what happened with the Hasmoneans. The Hasmoneans took the leadership because they said the future of the Jewish people lies in Torah right now. That's what's going to allow us to develop our future. It didn't develop the way they wanted. In the end, things self-destructed. The rabbis had to pull away from the temple and they exiled themselves, a self-imposed exile in order to retain the banner of Torah. But we're out of time. We're not yet done with this idea of Rav Chalap. We finished more than half. We'll have to pick up here, Be'ezat Hashem, next time. You guys will